Imagine you only have one outfit, and it works for everything. You can wear it to fly across the world, you can intrigue prospective mates, or you can stay warm and dry no matter the weather. Alas, this kind of outfit can't be bought. It's a matter of being born a bird. This hour, we humans will marvel at the avian wardrobe up close, with a photographer whose latest book is an homage to brilliant plumage. The book is called Feathers, and it's indeed the feathers themselves rather than the birds who are the stars of its pages. The author previously documented a different kind of sexual dimorphism, the lives of Texas high school football players, for the best-selling book Friday Night Lights. His photographs have also graced some 40 other book jackets and more than a dozen National Geographic covers over the years. He received a National Magazine Award for the National Geographic essay Was Darwin Wrong? And now Robert Clark joins us on The Exchange to talk about his book, Feathers. Robert Clark, welcome to the program.
It's nice to be here.
Lovely to have you. So you've got a very varied background, but how did you become so interested in documenting bird feathers?
It started out as a story for the National Geographic. Before this article, I had worked on five or six stories about evolutionary biology. And this book, at its core, is about evolutionary biology.
And that article, I think I read it preparing for this interview, you collaborated with Carl Zimmer on the evolution of feathers?
Yeah, Carl and I have had the opportunity to work on about four or five stories together, which is always helpful. He's quite a writer, so it always I try to up my level. But he's been fun to work with.
So the article there, we're talking about the long, curious, and extravagant history of feathers. Let's talk about the feathers in your book. How many species did you end up documenting?
I ended up shooting over 350 different feathers and feather types. So it was there's a lot more that I photographed than are in this book. So it was an opportunity to kind of do as varied an examination as possible. Not just about beauty, but about functionality as well.
Right, and there's a lot to delve into on the functionality. I do want to ask you, just to give folks a mental image here, the feathers in this book are not still attached to birds. They are sort of these disembodied objects. Where did they come from, and how did you handle that?
I photographed in a lot of different zoological collections around the world. Museums tend to have feathers as part of their collections, or natural history museums do, and they have a lot of them there for study, and we were able to work with five or six museums around the world.
So the beauty of these feathers, their objects in this case, is it stands for itself. You mentioned all of the different functionalities. Could you give us a quick anatomy primer on the utility and the look of feathers, how it varies depending on where they are on the bird's body?
There's different purposes, and we've all seen, downy feathers that are in coats and pillows and things like that, and those are not flight feathers, obviously, but they have a very important function, which is to keep the birds warm. And they also, they work as in down jackets. They can keep you, they don't warm you up unless it's cold in that sense. So there's that, and there's the flight feathers, which are the long leading edge feathers. There's secondary flight feathers, which are behind the flight feathers and actually help with rise and fall of the bird. There's tail feathers that help guide the bird while it's flying. There's feathers that are only for sexual selection. They're usually on the male, and they're the ones that are brightly colored and extravagant usually. So there's all sorts of different feathers.
Of course, and talking about those flight feathers and thinking about the origin of feathers as a animal feature, does it overlap with the origin of flight in animals completely?
Well, there's different theories on that. Some people believe that they originated running to help the birds run up or glide down inclines or hills. But even to go further back than that, in embryos, bird embryos, there are features called placoats, and just with a tiny tweak, those become the quills for feathers, and another tiny tweak, they could become reptilian scales. So there's little tiny aspects of these things that we don't know. We don't necessarily know what turns these on and off to try and understand the core and the root of it. But there's a lot of different theories on this. And actually, feathers existed on species before they were on birds.
What kind of species?
It was a pre-dinosaur species at about 185 million years ago. The picture for that isn't in the book because it's just hard to visually understand and to see in a, you know, in an aesthetic way. So we do have fossils in there from the Liaoning province in China, which are 140, 160 million years old. So there's a province in China which is, the preservation is phenomenal.
We're talking with photographer Robert Clark. He's a frequent contributor to National Geographic and has a new book out documenting bird feathers, very up close, very personal, and very beautiful. Robert, you're just talking about an example of feathers that predates feathers, going back, I would imagine, 200 million years or more. Are there still living examples of primitive feathers or just hollow filaments kind of coming out of the skin?
There are a few feathers that are that are more primitive. Cassowaries have very primitive feathers. In general, it seems to be on birds that are flightless birds. Ones like ostriches have some feathers that are kind of an older evolutionary type.
Yeah, ostrich, that's a great example. We were talking about the functions of feathers, you know, warmth or flight or attracting a mate. What have feathers done for ostriches lately?
You know, that's a pretty good question. I think it's mostly about sexual selection. And they, you know, even though they're in parts of the world where it's very warm, and at night they do get, it does get colder. So I'm sure that they have a function of keeping the bird at a good temperature.
I threw out a number earlier, which may be totally unfactual. When did feathers come on the scene, evolutionarily speaking? How many hundreds of millions of years ago, if we can?
Well, the precursors, I believe, were around 185, 190 million years. But the birds from the Liaoning province are around 165 million years old to 140 million years. And the preservation on those is phenomenal. And they can tell from the preservation actually what color they were. So the preservation is so detailed that they're able to accurately estimate what the color of the fossil was.
What color are they?
Well, it's varied. They're multicolored, you know, and they have, you know, flight feathers and, you know, secondary flight feathers. So they have the same types of feathers that are on birds today.
Those are some of the most beautiful photographs, in my opinion, in this book. Feathers are the spreads where you see all of the different kinds of feathers that may have come off of one bird or one side of a bird. The book is called Feathers, most appropriately. The author's Robert Clark. I'm Emily Curitan, and you are welcome to join our discussion, 800-838-3760. Bring us your feather questions or drop them off at our inbox, jx@jeffnet.org. Robert, what gives feathers their colors?
Well, there's something called structural color, which is one of the things I learned on this this article that I thought was really the most interesting. And it's the same thing in butterflies and flowers. There's two kinds of color. There's pigmentary color and structural color. And the pants that we wear or the paint on our walls is pigmentary color, meaning that the color is added secondarily. And in structural color, it's actually part of the physical structure of the object, whether it's a butterfly's wing or flowers or bird feathers. And the way that works is that the light coming in to the feather filters out one of the wavelengths, depending on the object, and it appears to change colors or have an iridescent quality to it. And that is why feathers are so beautiful, and that is why butterflies have a glint in the sun when they fly and change colors. So it's about our relationship to where we're looking at the feather, because the light gets changed as it goes through it.
And does that only occur when it's a structural color, like
Yes.
You know, an example like a flamingo, is that a pigmentary coloration or a structural coloration?
Well, that's a great example. That's both. Because a lot of their color comes from their diet, from the krill that they eat.
But they're still born a little pink? Is that?
Well, they're practically, they're very light pink when they're born. And it's really their diet in that sense. But there is structural color as well. But I think the dominant color feature in flamingos is their diet.
So in the foreword to your book, Feathers, your collaborator, the writer Carl Zimmer, he describes plumage as an evolutionary rejiggering. Could you explain what he meant there?
Well, I think it's adaptive, and they had different purposes, and then thus the five or so different types of feathers that, you know, at one point they were used for flight, and then they were used, they evolved to help with warmth when they started to surround the body and the you know, the heart center and the intestinal tracts and things like that. They started to spread out in a sense around the body, and thus were changed for different uses on the body.
You mentioned earlier a pre-dinosaur species with feathers, a part of the fossil record in China. Are there dinosaurs with feathers that we know of?
Yeah, I photographed a feathered T-Rex actually in China, and it's a fossil of two T-Rexes that perished together, and then one of them has a feather patch on its chest about the size of one foot square size.
So a T-Rex with a feathered chest. Wow, that's kind of adorable to imagine.
Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, mammals. One of the defining characteristics of mammals is that they have hair, and whales have a patch of hair on them, usually on their chest area or the bottom side of the whale.
Fascinating. And talking about dinosaurs with feathers, are paleontologists still arguing over whether birds and dinosaurs have descended from one another, whether birds came from dinosaurs or the chicken or the egg, I guess, argument there?
I don't think that there's any question, certainly amongst the leading paleontologists and the people that I've worked with from the American Museum of Natural History and the University of the Field Museum in Chicago. And there's really not much question that feathers, that the birds are dinosaurs, or one branch of dinosaurs.
I see. And going back to your book here, we've been talking with Robert Clark about Feathers. It's a beautiful photography book about displays of brilliant plumage, really close-up photographs of feathers taken out of the context of the bird, so you can really look at the form there. Still time for questions or comments here if you'd like to join this discussion with Robert Clark. That's 800-838-3760, or you can email us jx@jeffnet.org. Some of the individual feathers in here, Robert, are just, the variety is astounding. I had a few examples picked out. Like, for example, when we see a serrated edge on a bird feather, what does that tell us about the animal?
Well, in one of the pictures in the book, it's of an owl, and the serrated edge helps the owl fly silently at night to improve its hunting capabilities. But that's based on the shape of the wing.
I see. So the serrated edge cuts down on the sound, so the prey just never hears it coming.
Well, they may hear it coming, but it may be too late.
Uh-huh. And why is the superb lyrebird the first feather in your book? And can it really mimic a chainsaw?
Oh, it's unbelievable. There's actually videos on YouTube which are amazing because you would think that it was a chainsaw. So they're an amazing bird. They have windows built into the feather. So in its sexual dance, when it lifts these feathers up, it comes forward and it covers its eye. But the windows help it maintain a visual connection to the mate that they're trying to seduce.
Oh, fascinating. That's a superb lyrebird, also an astounding mimic, as we were talking about. It can sound like a chainsaw. Oh, Robert Clark, your book, a lot of these flashy feathers, they belong to the males of a species. Can you tell us about the most striking case of males looking different than females or sexual dimorphism?
There's one of my favorite feathers in the book is the great Argus, and it's kind of a drab brown bird, whether it's a male or female, except for the males, when they lift their wing up, there's this very elaborate, kind of gaudy feather, and it's got blue in it, it's got yellow in it, it's orange, and there's all these little dots around it that are different sizes. And some evolutionary biologists believe that the shapes of the the spots replicate seeds that the great Argus eats. So it fools or it attracts females because they think that the male has a certain amount of food.
Oh, fascinating. And I'm looking at the picture now. It's a two-page spread in the book Feathers, and these do look like tiny seeds built into the striations here. Do the males actually ever carry food in their wings?
I don't think so.
Okay. Climbing into the minds of birds here with Robert Clark. Robert, did you find any examples where the females were the flashy ones?
Not very often. I mean, one of the most interesting examples of the diversity of male sexual selection in feathers was the birds of paradise. There's 32 birds of paradise, and they all have a completely different visual sexual attraction component to their feathers.
In the dance or the feathers themselves?
Well, the feathers are part of their dance. There's the king bird of paradise, and it clears the floor of the forest and then does a fancy little dance. And the feather on that looks kind of like a lollipop. It's got a round top to it, and that's on the tail feathers, and it just kind of sways back and forth in a kind of a little hypnotic dance.
Well, and as we go out here, who's the most promiscuous bird that you studied for this book?
Oh, I don't know who that would be. There's a lot of birds that are very successful at reproduction, but a lot of the reasons they're successful is that they have more of an ability to adapt, given the loss of environment. I would say the least adaptive is something like the passenger pigeon, which, you know, wasn't able to keep up with the predation on the species, and that's why they're extinct.
We've been talking with Robert Clark, a photographer for National Geographic. His new book is called Feathers. Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.